left off last week, we began discussing the principle of Ein Hocha B'Mamanach HaRov, how the principles that we use in terms of doing a mamanus to Paschal Shailas are radically different than other areas of Halacha. So whereas in Isura, we're familiar with the Dinim of Rov, and the Dinim of Chazok, different kinds of Rov, etc. When it comes to mamanus, everything seems to fail, and we follow a different principle called Muchsok, called the Ein Hocha B'Mamanach HaRov, so we spoke last week, whether that's a din d'oraisa, din d'rabbanan, most of the poskim assume that's a real bona fide din of min haTorah. But notwithstanding this principle of Ein Hocha B'Mamanach HaRov, there seem to be some exceptions to this rule. So last week we spoke a little bit about the exception of the Shesh Maisa raises, basically in Sanhedrin, that when you mavar the when you use Rov just to get the facts before the case, and that's not chatzit Ein Hocha B'Mamanach HaRov. But there is another exception to the rule of Ein Hocha B'Mamanach HaRov, and that's a sugya that appears in the beginning of Basra, where the Gemara discusses the following shaila. So we have a din Torah between two people. I come and I say to you that you owe me $1,000. And you I lent you $1,000 6 months ago, and you respond that, yes, I paid back the $1,000, but I paid it back before the debt was even collectible. What do you mean? I paid it back already 5.5 months ago, even though it wasn't collectible until now. So the Gemara says, that's a ridiculous response. That's a terrible taina. The person who says, Parati b'soch hazman, the Gemara says, how can you believe a guy who says that Parati b'soch hazman, chazoka, ain't other than Parati b'soch hazman. It's understood that most normal people don't pay back debts until the debts are due. Most people are not running to go pay back. Halavai, the Gemara says, Halavai, you're from Bismano. Halavai, people would pay back debts when they have to pay back their debts. So most people hold on to the money to the last minute. So therefore the Gemara says that that taina of paraiti, if a person says I was pared the chov, is not an acceptable taina. So what's the din? So the person who has the claim is going to win the din taira, because normally when you have a din taira, you have to figure who has the better claim. So when I say you owe me the money, so normally you would have a right to say paraiti, you have a right to say you paid back the chov, unless I have a shtar. If I have a document that says that you owe me $100, so then that's a better taina. Because if you really paid back the chov, then you would have insisted on ripping up the document. That's what the Gemara calls shtar chaviyadi, my boy. If I really paid back the debt, so then what am I doing with the shtar? But if I don't have a document, so normally a person is believed to say parati, because that's an acceptable response. But if it's parati b'sach zmano, that's no good. So comes the Gemara and says, chazok eidon and pere b'sach zmano. So come the Acharim and he asks, what do you mean chazok eidon and pere b'sach zmano? Isn't that only a rove? It means it's the overwhelming odds that the person didn't pay back as he claims he did. Okay, it's an overwhelming odds, but it's still a rove. It means it's a 90% chance that he in fact did not pay back the chov. But Afal Bichain, he's the muchzok, he's holding on to the cash. So how could we use that chazaka and use it to be motzi mamon? So you see from here that sometimes you reach a certain point in Hilchos Rov where the threshold has been reached that even in the realm of Rov, even in the realm of Mamonos, that's going to be good. So how do you know when you reach that threshold? So that's what the Mefarshim explained. That's what the Gemara uses the term chazaka. We've said already in the past, the term chazaka means a lot of different things. Chazaka means follow the status quo. Chazaka means if you do things three times, it's a chazaka. The word chazaka has a lot of different meanings and different contexts. So here, chazaka means it's such an overwhelming rove. It's so beyond the regular statistics of rove that it's reached a point that we can say that it's with certainty. It's an absolute. It's not even a suffix anymore. It's a chazaka that this is the way things. This is the way of the world. Chazaka in other parabasov's mana. Again, do we know in our heart of hearts that every once in a while there's one guy who goes a frum shus and didn't pay back a chol before this man? Yeah, it's true. There exists such a phenomenon. But we could say about such a pattern in human behavior, chazoka eidana perevusel zmanu. So once you reach that point of chazoka, that's going to work even in the realm of dinei mamonos. Now again, it's hard for us to take any given case and to say, oh, this is a chazaka. We have a handful of cases in Chazal, the Chazal call things chazakas. So whatever Chazal call things is chazakas, then we have a right to say it works even in Dinei Mamonos. But it's going to be very hard for us to extrapolate. For us, it looks like a rove, so it's hard for us to know where do you draw the line between a rove and a chazaka. But if you cross that line, so you see from Chazal that is in fact the case, the chazaka in other parameters matter. This general principle, putting aside the exceptions that we've highlighted, the general principle of Ein Hocha B'Mamanach HaRov, which is really the corollary of Hamotzi Mechaver L'Varaya, carries over to other applications of Dina Mamonos, it really serves as a fundamental premise in terms of paskening shailos of Dina Mamonos. So we're not going to learn all of Dina Mamonos in the next 10 minutes, but at least to highlight one or two important klolim in the realm of paskening sveikas of Dina Mamonos, which all seem to emanate from this idea of the significance of Hamotzi Mechavel of Araya. There is a sugya that appears in many, many places in Shas. Some of the primary sugyas, third parak of Bava Basra, the second parak of Ksubas, but it's really scattered throughout Shas. That's the principle of Migo. When we look at Chatzkebatim, we spent a lot of time on this a couple of years ago, the principle of Migo. Migo means, it's hard to do justice to the principle of Migo in 10 seconds, but Migo basically means as follows. Habitin Torah, I claim that you owe me $100. So I advance my time in Beis Din, you advance your time in Beis Din. So Beis Din listens to both sides of the story. And there are klolim in halacha, what's considered to be a good taina. Sometimes I have a better taina, you have a better taina, whatever. To the best taina is going to win the din taina. So there are klolim, there are dinim, there are sugyas and shas, what's considered to be a good taina. So let's say, for example, if I say to you that you owe me $100, and you respond, I don't know who you are, I never met you before. So that's an acceptable taina. That's hamotz mechamev v'raya. But what if I say, I lent you $100, and you say, yeah, it's true, I borrowed $100 from you, but now I can't remember did I pay back or not. It's a really whole different kind of a taina. So that's a much weaker kind of a taina. So there are dinim, there are sugyas and shas, what's considered to be a better taina, worse taina, etc. So comes the Mishnayos and the Gemaras and tell us, what's the din the following case? I advance a taina to you, and I say you owe me $100. And you respond with a taina. And the taina that you respond itself is not a very good taina. It's not a very good claim. Let's say, if I would just look at a vacuum at Reuven's words of A and Shimon's response of B, Reuven should really win the din taina. Reuven has a better leg to stand on. But if Shimon, the one who's responding to the taina, if he would have responded something else, he could have responded something else. He had another taina in his pocket. He could have given a counterclaim that would have been acceptable, but if somehow he missed it. He didn't do that. So the halacha says that Migo, that he could have said another claim, he's going to be believed with the claim that he responds with. It's a strange concept in halacha. Migo, I could have said X, believe me when I say Y. Let's tell a marshal. If I say to you, you broke my window. So your immediate response would have been a good response, would have been, I don't know what you're talking about. I've never been anywhere near your window. I'm Kaifer Bakol. So if you would have responded to that, so then you would have been part of finished. I was a Kalibarai, you would have walked out scot-free. But you don't respond that. What you respond is like this. Yes, it's true. I broke your window. Absolutely. And it's not a $100 window, 100%. But I'll tell you why I broke your window. I broke your window because 6 months ago you borrowed $100 from me and you never paid me back the money and I'm upset at you and you really owe me $100, so I broke a window which is worth $100 of yours. The guy comes with such a crazy response that I broke your window because you're on it. Now, if that would really be true, so then we would have called it a wash, and okay, it wouldn't be the nice thing to do to break people's window, but in theory, I owe you $100, you owe me $100. So in theory, that should get you off the hook. If you could bring Adam, that's what happened, you would get off the hook. But you don't have the Adam. You have Mishagas, that what's called Ischayafta li kenegdoi. It means I broke your window, that was a response to the $100 that you're supposed to pay me. So that response in and of itself is a gornish. That response doesn't have a leg to stand on. A guy counterclaims in court, such a Mishagas, he's going to lose the din Torah. But if you think about it for a second, wait a second, he could have just simply said he didn't break the window. He had the possibility to say that he didn't. He knew he could have said that. He had that taina in his pocket. If he would have advanced that taina, I didn't break the window, he would have let him off scot-free. But he didn't say that. He said this cuckoo business with the borrowing money. So comes the Gemara and says, he's believed to tell us the Mishagas about the crazy story about why he broke the window. Migo, that he could have said, I didn't break the window altogether. Migo, I wasn't chayv altogether. That's the principle of Migo. That's one of 5 million different examples of Migo. So believe me to say time X, which itself is not a valid time, itself is a absurd response. Migo, that could have said time Y.
Isn't it strange, though, that we believe him
on
the basis of that he could have lied?
Well, not that he could have...
Because the claim of that I didn't break the window is a lie.
Right. So we'll see in a second how that works. So that's the yisod of Migo. So the question is, where did this come from? What kind of story is this? Where did Migo come from? So the Gemara never spells out explicitly, Menani Mila, there's such a concept of Migo. It seems from the Gemara pretty clear that this is a Svar Min HaTorah, that this exists Min HaTorah. The Rishonim start looking around, how do you know this is Svar? Is it possible? Where did it come from? So the conventional wisdom, how to understand what this is all about. What do you mean, Migo? Migo, what? Where does it say Migo in the Torah? Where did this Migo come from? So many suggest that Migo is really just an application of the old principle of Rove. Rove means that if it's statistically probable that X is true, so then we follow Rove. So here, there's a certain statistical reality here. The reality is, the odds are that if a person really wanted a lie, he would have lied the simplest, straightforward lie. If you have two lies on the table, so which lie are you going to say? You're going to say a lie, a convoluted lie, or you're going to tell a straight, simple, to the point, a lie? So most people, have to take a poll of all people who lie, Baruch Hashem, though, we wouldn't be able to follow, you know, enter into that poll. If you take a lie of all the shakvanim in the world, so a guy, if you want to give a shekher, you're going to give the straightforward lie. Why should you give a lie? It looks like a bazooty lie. Give the straightforward story. So comes the Rishonim and explain that the odds are that from the fact that you told the backwards lie, rather than saying this most straightforward lie, is an indication that you're not lying. It's probably a proof that you're talking about, you're probably telling the truth. Probably. We just said it. Rovach Ramatos. So we don't need a pasuk to tell me that Migo works. You don't need a gzeres hakos that Migo works. Migo is a plain old simple application of Rov. Just as Rov, Paskin Shilas, the Rov is that the animal's not a treifa. The Rov is the woman is muteris. The Rov is the mikvas kasha. The Rov is that Reuven's telling the truth. That's the principle of Acharamata. So you follow the principle of Rov. That's where Migo comes from. That the odds are, statistically, there's an 85% chance. What's the difference whether it's a biologic Rov, whether a veterinarian Rov, whether it's a psychologist Rov? The psychologist will tell you that there's an 85% chance that the guy's telling the truth, because if he would have wanted a lie, he would have lied straight. That's considered to be a Rov and a law. If that's the case, then Migo is really just a subcategory of Rov, then we understand quite well what many Rishonim tell us in the beginning of Metzia, that Migo works lahachzik mamon, but Migo doesn't work lahotzi mamon. The example that we gave of Migo, and if you look throughout Shas, 99% of the Migos in Shas are in this type of a scenario, where I'm coming to you with a claim. So Reuven comes to Shimon and says, you owe me $100. And Shimon counters the claim, and we're going to believe him based on Migo. We're believing Shimon to hold on to his money. We're not believing Shimon to take money from somebody else. We're not using Migo to take money out of somebody else's pocket. We're using Migo to defend myself against the claim that's coming against me. So why should that be so? What's the difference? Why is it that Migo lahachzik works and Migo lahotzi doesn't work? So the answer to this makes a lot of sense. That if you hold that Migo is really just a cousin of Rov, now, one second, Rov can't work lahotzi mamon. By its very definition, hamotz mechavel avaraya. Rov is limited in its capacity. Rov can work in isurim. Rov cannot work in mamonis. What does it mean Rov can't work in mamonis? It doesn't mean that Rov is not a tool that the dayanim use in mamonis. What it means is that you can't use it to be motzi mamon, but you can use it to lepotra mamon. You can use it lahachzik mamon. You could use Rov to hold on to money. If you have a claim against me, and the Rov's at my side, so Rov's going to help me. So Rov works here, lahachzik mamon, to keep it beyond a muchzah. But Rov is not going to work lahotzi mamon. It's not going to work to get money away from somebody else. So just as Rov isn't going to work to get money away from somebody else, Migo's not going to work to get money away from somebody else as well.
Is there a question in this case, who's really holding on to the money? Because the borrower is Moda, at some point it was the lender's money.
Yeah, that's true, but bottom line is muchzik means the whose wallet the money's in. Not in theory, where the money is floating in lumdus. There's one day in the Gemara Bishamai holds that if I have a shtar against you, the shtar says that you owe me $100, I'm considered to be the muchzik of the money. And now let's say we have a suffix that whether the shtar was paid back or something, we have a real bona fide suffix about the status of the shtar. So the Beshame says that the malva is considered to be the muchzik because he has the shtar. So shtar omer ligvas kegavi dami, a document that looks like it's supposed to be paid is as if it was paid up already. So it's as if the malva has the money. And they still say that kol's man that the money is cash is not in the pocket. It's as if it wasn't paid. So even Beshamai, who has that unique sheet of Ashtar, I don't think would say that over here. That's only because of the significance of Ashtar. Where did the Rishonim get this idea from? That there's a difference between a Migo Lahachzik and a Migo Lahotzi. We understand it conceptually, but is there really any Mokra in the Gemara itself? The Rishonim quote on Daf Beis and Bav Metzia, that could be from the very first Mishnah of Masechet Bav Metzia. We need a background to understand the Mishnah, in order to understand what the Raya is. So the very famous Mishnah in Masechet Bav Metzia, of Shnayim Echzim Betalas, If two guys walk into Beis Din, one guy's holding on to one end of the talus, the other guy's holding on to the other end of the talus. Zeh omer kula shali. One guy says, the talus is totally mine. The other guy says, the talus is totally mine. What do you do? So the Mishnah gives a very strange psak. So the Mishnah says, this guy takes a shvua that's not more than, it's hard what the shvua is exactly. It's all sugi in the Gemara itself. This guy takes a shvua, and this guy takes a shvua, and then in the end, then they split the talus. That's basically what happens. So the first three bladim of Mitzia try to figure out where that comes from, where the shvua come from, what the blah. But that's the mice at the bottom line. Zeh omer kula shali. So they split the talus. That's the simple case. Then the Mishnah says, what if you have as follows? What if you have two guys walking into base and holding onto the talus? Zeh omer kula shali, v'zeh omer chetzi shali. So one guy claims that the whole talus belongs to me. Reuven says he owns the whole talus. And Shimon says, well, you're right, you own half the talus, but I own the other half of the talus, so what do you do? So comes the Mishnah and says, well, the one half of the talus that's not being discussed, that's not being disputed, obviously that's going to go to Reuven. So that's no question. The Mishnah says, Reuven's going to walk away with that half of the talus. Now the fighting, in a sense, about another half of the talus. So then, you apply it in the Mishnah. So you end up, each one takes their appropriate shvua, and then they split the other half of the talus. So simple math says, right? If 50% went to Reuven without a discussion, the other 50%, half to Reuven, half to Shimon, what do we got? We got 75%, three quarters of the talus goes to one of them, and one quarter of the talus goes to the other. Sure, very good. So that's the psach of the Mishnah. So come to Rishonim on that Gemara, Tosfos, the Rabban, all the Rishonim jump on that Gemara and say, wait a second. So why do we say that we split the talus 75% to 25%, why don't we say as follows? The guy who claimed Chetzi Shali, he could have claimed Kula Shali. He's also walking to Beis and holding on to half the talus. So just as in the first case of the Mishnah, if I'm walking to Beis and holding the talus, and you're walking up and holding the same talus, each one had a valid tain in his pocket called Kula Shali. So why don't we say that let's believe the person who says Chetzi Shali, Migo, that he could have said Kula Shali. So, and what would that have meant? If he would have said Kula Shali, then he would have walked away with 50% of the talus. So now that he says Chetzi Shali, let's let him also walk away with 50% of the talus. So why do we only end up giving him 25% of the talus? Migo, that he could have advanced a different taina. That's the kasha of Tyson, the Rishon, the Ramban, all the Rishonim are bothered with. So one of the many terus of this kasha is, no, that's a violation of Migo Lahotzi. Why? Because the every time a person is holding on to a talus, whatever part is in dispute, the halacha views immediately as you're 50% owner of that part that's in dispute. So when the Reuven and Shimon are walking into Beis Din, 50% of the talus they're not arguing about. So that's, hands down, that belongs to Reuven. That's not even the Shiloh. The second half of the talus that they're fighting about, so we already view it as if half of it is mine and half of it is yours. So now we're going to turn around and say, Reuven should have gotten 75% and Shimon should get 25%. So we're going to give the other 25% to Shimon. We're going to say, let's take away from Reuven's 25%. Migo, that Shimon could have said something else. So come to Rishon and say, wait a second. How can you take away a guy's claim? How can you take away a guy's talus based on Migo? Migo doesn't work that way. Migo works l'hachzik mama. Migo doesn't work l'hotzi mama. So this would be a very lumdish application of l'hotzi mama. So Migo l'hotzi l'yamrinim. You can learn Bava Metzia 100 times and not realize that that's what the first Mishnah Bava Metzia is saying. So the Rishonim saw on this Mishnah Bava Metzia a source for this principle of Migal Haitzi Le'amina. There are other Mekaris and Shas also. This is the simplest one. So I figured I'd just give one of them. This is the easy case. So the bottom line is Migal Haitzi Le'amina, according to many Rishonim. And the reason is because Ein Hochin B'mamun Acha Harov. There was another sugya that also appears in a few places, appears in the 5th Pekha of the Kam and the 8th Pekha of Bamitziya, that also shed some light on this principle of Ein Hochin B'Mamun Acharov, and that's the sugya that's called Bari V'Shema. What if you have a din Torah that I come to you and I say, you owe me $100. I know for a fact that you owe me $100. I remember I lent you $100. We can't find the Edom, there's no Shah. I remember last week I lent you $100. And you respond, you know, I can't remember. I was very busy last week. I don't remember. It could be I borrowed $100. Could be I didn't borrow $100. I just can't remember what happened last week. So what's the halacha? So I'm advancing a tainah. It's called a tainah's bari. I'm saying I remember with certainty, belishum suffik, that I lent you $100. And you're responding with a power of a half-baked response that maybe I did, maybe I didn't. So what's the din? Do we say that bari v'shema, bari adif? Or do we say bari v'shema, lav bari adif? What's the halacha? So it's machlekes amaroyim. So one day it says, Chapari b'shem, Chapari Yadif. You, Reuven knows for Shimon, Shimon can't remember. So Mustafa, Reuven's telling the truth, Bar b'shem, Bar Yadif. And the other day, the Gemara responds and says, no. Bar b'shem, Allah, Bar Yadif. You know why? Because I'm Motzim, Echavero, Allah, Haraya. If you want to get money from somebody else, you have to prove it. And apparently, a bar b'shema is not sufficient proof to be motzi mamon. The question is, why not? What's the issue? What's lacking in bar b'shema bar yadif, la bar yadif? What is wrong with the fact that I know for a fact and you don't know? Why isn't that a good taina? Why shouldn't that win the din Torah? So the Pnei Yeshua, we quoted the Pnei Yeshua last week in a different part of this piece, but in that same piece in Maseches Gittin, the Pnei Yeshua suggests that maybe the reason is as follows. This goes back to what's the svara, what's the makor for the din of Hamotze Mechaver Levaraya? Why is there such a din of Hamotze Mechaver Levaraya? So Pnei Yeshua, we spoke about this Pnei Yeshua, right? He explains that there's a fundamental machlekes na'amaroyim. Where did this din come from, and how does it work? So according to one day in the Gemara, Hamotze Mechaver Levaraya is just a posh of the svara, namely, how are you going to take away money? It's not yours. You have to bring a raya. If something bothers you, your head hurts, go to the doctor. Your tooth hurts, go to the dentist. If something bothers you, go take care of it. It's a posh of the svar. You have something that hurts? Do something about it. Don't blame the other person. You take the initiative. You want to get money from somebody? Good. Go do something about it. Go prove to the base. It's Allah halavi raya to get the money. That's one day in the Gemara. And the other day, the Gemara says, no, it's not a svara. It's a gzeres hakosav, it's a posuk. Vibal dvarim yugash aleihem, or apishna merim yakum dav. It's a mokar, it's a din deraisa that teaches us hamotz mechvel avarayim. So my nafkamina between whether it's a svara, whether it's a posuk. So the Pnei Yeshua says the nafkamina is as follows. How high the raya has to be? What's the threshold of raya that's necessary? If you hold that it's just a posh of a svara, you can't get money unless you've proven it, in effect. So how hard do you have to prove it? What's considered to be the burden of proof? So the burden of proof is whatever is considered to be an acceptable proof in Kol Tarkula. You want a robe, you want other things, whatever meets the mark for a proof in other areas of halacha would suffice here as well. But if you hold that a motzi mechaver lav haraya means it's you need a raya and a raya brura, it's got to be eidim apishnayim eidim, anything short of two eidim will not suffice as a raya for the purposes of dinim amanus. So says the Pnei Yeshua, that's the machlokes whether holchim b'mamnach harov or ain holchim b'mamnach harov. If you hold that all you have to do is just meet the standards of proof of other areas of halacha, because a motzi mechaver levaraya is not a pasuk, it's not a gzeres hakosav, it's just a svara. So then robe should be good. Robe is good enough to paskin eshes ishalas. Robe can paskin treifa shalas. Why can't robe paskin mamnach shalas? If you hold it, there's a gzeres hakosav of yibal devarim, yigash aleihem, apishna emedim, amotzchavel of haraya, hey haidia. You have to be moitzi mam, to be moitzi mam, you need the greatest proof possible. So then, only to eidim. Anything short of to eidim is not going to work. So says the Pnei Yeshua, that's the same issue with bar v'shema. Bar v'shema sounds like a really pretty good proof. I mean, logically, bar v'shema, Reuven knows the facts, and Shimon can't remember the facts. So who's probably telling the truth? Reuven, the stomach's telling the truth. You may even want to say that bar v'shema is like a rove. The rove is, the odds are, when you have two people talking, I remember for certain it happened this way, and you can't remember, I'm probably telling the truth. So it's a rove, it's a very good rove. So says the Pnei Yeshua, that's a very nice rove, but rove doesn't work, l'hotzi mamon. So if you hold that motzi mechaver levaraya is not such a proof. It's not such an ironclad rule. It just means that you have to bring some kind of a standard of proof. So rove is a good enough standard of proof. Bar v'shem, bar yadif is a good enough standard of proof. Migo maybe would be good enough. Maybe migo l'hotzi I'm reading according to that day. But the way we paskin that motzi mechaver levaraya is a gzeres hakosav, and therefore rove doesn't work, and therefore migo doesn't work. So the corollary is bar v'shema bar yadif is not going to work either. So you can't be finished. You can't be mitzi mamon unless you have the real makoy apishnayim eidim. Anything else is going to fail in order to be mitzi mamon. So we have a whole series of different nafkaminas and dina, different tools that in theory would have been in our arsenal to be mitzi mamon. We could have theoretically used rove to mitzi mamon. We could have theoretically used migo to mitzi mamon. We could have theoretically used bar v'shem bar yadif to mitzi mamon, but each one of the above fell because what trumps everything in the dinim amanus are those magic words hamotzi mechaver levaraya. Again, we saw that there are some cases that even that fails. That was the chazaka story. That was the shmeitzer of last week. There are every once in a while some kind of situations that even that gets a monkey wrench thrown into. But by and large, the rule in dinim amanus is that an absolute. What the Gemara says: zek klal golah b'din hamotzi mechaver levaraya.
Could you say that the Shema also has an ego? He could have said, "I didn't borrow. You didn't borrow it, but he didn't."
Right, so the problem. Yeah, so that's, that becomes questionable whether you have to go through the Kolam of Migo very carefully to see. Remember when we learned Chaskevatim, we spent 6 months trying to figure out the Kolam of Migo. The Shach has like 50 Kolam of Migo. He's saying he has 100 Kolam of fake, he's got 150 or so Kolam of Migo. You have to remember, have to go through whether that would be a good Migo or not. So now that we know that there's such a principle, it's a din minat Torah, we have a mokor, a posik, everything, and we know that it's really the most powerful thing that we have in terms of passing the shahs of the imamnas. As you say, in American law, they speak about possession being 9/10 of the law, so in halacha, it's 99% of the law. It's the overwhelming principle in all of the imamnas. We have to analyze what exactly does it mean for a person to be a muksach. What do the words mean that a person is coming to be motzei mechamela v'raya? What does it mean the other person is the muksach, he's holding on to it? So in some areas of halacha, it's very obvious what muksach means. Let's say if I'm wearing this jacket right now, so I'm a muksach on the jacket, I'm holding on to the jacket. Or if I have my wallet in my pockets, I'm a muksach on my wallet. You want to come and get the wallet from me? Of course you have to be motzei mechamela v'raya. However, there are some areas of halacha where standard muksach doesn't really make any sense. Let's say, for example, in the realm of karka. So would you say that a muksach and karka, let's say, Lamar, someone come to me that didn't turn, they would say, that house that you're living in, so that house belongs to me. And I would say, I'm a shul, you know what I mean? I'm living in a house. You're standing across the street. I'm living in a house. I'm the muksach and the karka. So it is clear for the Gemara at the beginning of the third parak of Basra that that's not true. That the fact that somebody is living in a house, the fact that somebody is standing on a field, that's not called muksach. Muksach means kishmai kenu, that I'm holding on to something, that I'm muksach on it in a physical sense of the word. My relationship to karka, by its very definition, I can't hold on to the ground. So I could be laying on the floor and holding on, that doesn't mean anything. Holding on to the ground doesn't mean anything in halacha. There's no such concept of being muksach in land. So how do you pass in a shaila the entire land? If Reuben says the land is his, and Shimon says the land is his, so how do you know who's going to win the land? If there's no principle of muksach, what do you do? So the very first mishnah in the third brachah of the Basra tells us, implies to us, that's really the whole background to the whole third brachah of the Basra, is that there's a different principle in land, and that's what's called cheskes marakama. Cheskes marakama means, whenever I have a latest asafik in terms of land, so we go back in history, and we ask ourselves, well, who owned the land at one time? Who do we know owned the land before there was a suffix? So 20 years ago, we know that Reuven owned this land. And now we're having a latest suffix. Reuven says, the land still is. Shimon claims he bought the land. They're fighting out. They're having a sichsuch in Beis Din. Who is the rightful owner of the land? So what do you do when you have a suffix in the Nimamunas? So in a suffix in Metalatalin, you follow the principle of muksach. Whoever's holding on to it is the owner. In land, there is no such thing as a muksach. The fact that Reuven's sitting on the land now is meaningless. So what would we do? We'd have to go back to the history books and see at what point in history did we know who really owned the land. If we know that 10 years ago that Shimon owned the land, even though Reuven's on the land now, Shimon's going to get the land. The fact that Reuven is standing there is irrelevant. Shimon's going to get the land because Shimon has what's called a cheskes marakama. We know for a fact that he owned the land at one time, and that's what carries the day in terms of dinim mamnas. But now comes the Mishnah of the Basra and says, that's what the starting point is. That's what the halacha should have been, that whoever has the cheskes marakama wins. However, according to many Rishonim, it was the Tekanos Chachamim, it was the Rais, whatever it comes from, the Chachamim changed that a little bit. The halacha changes that a little bit. Why? Because it's very, very hard to implement that halacha. Why is it hard to implement that halacha? What's going to happen in the following case? Shimon, we know, 50 years ago, Shimon owned the land. That was Belishim Suffolk. Shimon, everyone agrees, Shimon owned the land 50 years ago. Now, Reuben is claiming, I bought the land from him 40 years ago. I bought the land. And Shimon say, no, I never sold you the land. So how is Reuben ever going to prove his case? So we say to Reuben, well, prove your case, bring your star. Bring your document that you bought the land. So Reuben says, a document now from 40 years ago? You want me to have a document? I have nothing else to do in my file cabinets. I got such a backlog of documents I should hold on to from 40 years ago, the real estate deed. So Reuben says, that's unreasonable. So comes the Gemara and says, you're right. It's unreasonable. It's not expected of Reuben to hold on to a document for so long. So how long do we expect Reuben to hold on to the document? 3 years. For 3 years, that's considered to be reasonable. People hold on to their shtaros for 3 years. After 3 years already, then you have a right to throw out your documents. So comes the Gemara and says, therefore, if Reuven's been living on this land for a long time, he's been living on the land for 3 years. And Shimon's been around. Shimon's been watching that Reuven's been living in the house. And Shimon hasn't said anything. He hasn't come to Beis Din to make a machah. And 3 years have passed, not a word out of Shimon, and Reuben's living there with his whole family, he's living in the house, and Shimon didn't say boo, and we can't expect Reuben to have a document to prove anything, is that so many years passed already. So then everything changes, that we no longer follow the Cheskes Marakama, now we follow what's called Cheskes Gimoshonim. Whoever's living on land, living in a house, working the field for 3 years, and there's been three things have happened. We know for a fact, we have Edom, he's been living there for 3 years. We know for a fact that the other Baldover has been around, has been watching, and hasn't said, hasn't done what's called an Alacha Machor, and it's already 3 years, so we know for a fact that it's not reasonable to expect Reuven to have a shtar anymore. That tilts everything in the balance of Reuven, and now Reuven walks away with the field. That's the first mission of the third Bechav of the Vasra, Cheskes Gimel Shonim. So, yeah, it's the whole parak. We spent the whole year in Yeshiva a couple of years ago and in the Kol Boker learning the Sigis of Cheskes Gimel Shonim. That's the din. But if not for the special quirk of Cheskes Gimel Shonim, if something's missing in that equation, let's say it's only been 2.5 years, or he doesn't have Edom that he's been there the full 3 years, or the other guy made a macha, or let's say the other guy, let's say was out of town in such a way that he couldn't have made a macha, whatever the details are, if there's something missing in the Cheskes Gimel Shonim, if you don't have all the criteria necessary to win the Din Torah, then we revert back to what the real halacha should have been. You follow Cheskes Marakama. So that's clear as day. For the whole third paragraph of the Vas, it's clear as day. And in the realm of Karka, the regular rule of Muksav doesn't apply. What we apply is the Cheskes Marakama. So comes the Gemara in Bavitzi and Davkuf and tells us that this principle of Cheskes Marakama does not only apply in Karka, it can sometimes be applicable in Metaphalon as well. Sometimes you can have a Din Torah that we throw our hands up. Bezin throws their hands up and says that we're going to follow the Cheskes Marakama. Why do you follow Cheskes Marakama? Don't you follow Muksuk? Isn't Muksuk the way to go? So says the Gemara, sometimes you have a fight between Reuben and Shimon that neither of them are a Muksuk. What's the case? There's an animal in question. Reuben claims, I own that animal. Shimon claims, I own the animal. What's the problem? The animal's out in the middle of the street. The animal's not in Reuben's house, not in Shimon's house. Reuben and Shimon are fighting over who owns the car. So if the car's parked in Reuben's driveway, I'm Muksuk on the car. But if it's parked in Shimon's driveway, he's Muksuk. The car's in the middle of the street. The car's in the public area. So now neither Reuben is the Muksuk, nor Shimon is the Muksuk. So now what do you do? So comes the Gemara and says, well, when you don't have Muksuk, so just as by Karka, when the concept halachically of Muksuk doesn't exist, so then the next best thing is Cheskes Marakama. So too by Metaltalin, if B'mitzius you don't have Muksuk, because the mice are the animals in the middle of the street, so the animal in the middle of the street is the halach equivalent of the house. That whenever Muksuk fails, either for halachic reasons or for technical reasons, either in the case of the house or in the case of the animal in the street, when Muksuk fails, the next best thing is Cheskes Marakama. Cheskes Marakama is a very handy thing in halacha. We do invoke the principle of Cheskes Marakama to paskin shfeikas and didimamunas. We will use that principle, but we don't use it in the presence of Muksuk. If there's a real Muksuk, let's say if Reuven is holding on to the animal, and we know that Shimon owned the animal last week, that doesn't mean anything. If Reuven owns the animal, so we can assume Reuven probably bought the animal from Shimon. So Muksuk is much more powerful than Cheskes Marakama, but if and when Muksuk doesn't exist, then Cheskes Marakama carries the day. So now we have to ask ourselves, where did this come from? This idea called Cheskes Marakama, it's appearing above Abbasu, it's appearing above Metziah. Throughout Shas, this concept of Cheskes Marakama, where did Chazal know it from? Where did it come from? So this was a major, major machlokes, the Gedolei HaMefarshim that broke out about 150 years ago. As to where does this issue come from? Where does this principle in Dinei Mamonos come from? Everything has to have a source. We know Rov comes from Echiram Nahatas, and we know that Muksa comes from, we think we know, Yibal Dvar Migra Shaleya, Apishnai Meidim. We had different possible makoros for the principle of Muksa, of Otsvech Levaraya. And Chazocha Meikara, we had a posuk from Ba'is HaManuga, we spoke about that, from Tsaras a couple of weeks ago, right? No, we can talk about that. Yeah. No, we can talk about that. So we know what Sveikas come from, and Sveikas, every principle we spoke about, we've been able to pin onto some kind of a posuk, some kind of a halacha somewhere. Where did this come from? Where did the Chazal make up this idea? Where did it come from? Yesh Me'ayin. There's a principle called Chazaka of Cheskes Marakama. So this machlokes literally broke out at the Shabbos table between two brothers. Who are the two brothers? The Baal HaKtzos, Ktzos HaChashen, and his brother, the Trumas HaKri. In the back of the Ktzos, there's a sefer written by the Trumas HaKri. I don't remember if he was an older brother or younger brother of the Ktzos. But the two Heiliger brothers, I don't know whether they actually thought about this at the Shabbos table, but I always say this, you know, Baruch Hashem, my two sons, we talk about a lot of things at the Shabbos table, but this is not usually the topic of conversation. Here, this is the two Heiliger brothers were arguing about, what's the lomdus? Where did this din come from of Cheskes Merkam? So the Ketzos suggests that this din of Cheskes Merkam has nothing to do with Didi Mamas. Has nothing to do with Muchsa, nothing to do with Mibal Tvar Bigashlam, nothing. If you're not a real bona fide muchzik, you're not holding on to the metaltlin, then you're not a muchzik. So where did Chesed Merkam come from? It says it tells, it's part of the halacha of Chazaka Mekara. Same way we spoke weeks ago about if you have a suffix, whether this woman is muteris or not. So what was she yesterday? What was she last week? If you have a suffix, whether this animal is kosher or not. What was it yesterday? What was it last week? There's a principle of following Chazaka Mekara. That's a din min haTorah, learned out from the Parsha of Negoim, etc. We spoke about the Arichos. There's a din min haTorah following Chazaka. You follow the status quo. So comes the Ketzos and says, that's exactly what Chesed Merkam is. Chesed Merkam is nothing more, nothing less than following the status quo. You follow the status quo in other areas of halacha, so you follow the status quo here as well. L'hachzik mamon means you're not taking away money based on this. You're using that as a way. There is no muchzuk, so there is no muchzuk of el v'raya. You're using chazaka meikara. What do you do when you have a suffix? I have a suffix. I have no way to resolve the suffix. So you're blight by chazaka, whatever the chazaka was. If yesterday used to belong to Reuven, then Zolzayin, that's the way it's going to belong to today. So according to the Ketzos, the din of Cheskes Merkam is not rooted in Mamonis, it's rooted in Isurim, it's rooted in Hukhas Kashrus, and Hukhas Taras Meshpacha, and Hukhas Eshazish, it's rooted in Dine Isurim. That's the din of Cheskes Merkam. And his brother, the Truma Sakri, said, it's not true. This has nothing to do with Yisurim. There are different areas of Halacha. Mamon and Yisur Le'afina, they have nothing to do with each other. What's the rule of Cheskes Merkama? Cheskes Merkama is a watered down muksuk. There's real muksuk. The real Makoya muksuk, of the super duper muksuk in the Torah, is when your mom's holding on to it, literally. Then there's a secondary type of a muksuk. A secondary type of muksuk means if you don't have anybody holding on to it, nobody's literally holding on to it. So the next best kind of a muksuk is someone who we know used to belong to. The fact that it used to belong to me creates muksuk B. That's a lower level shvacha muksuk, but it's still something. If it'll come into conflict with the real muksuk, it's not going to win. If we know that Reuben owned it last week, but now Shimon's holding on to it, it's metalfa and Shimon's holding on to it, so Cheskes Merkam is not going to win to be motzi from a real muksuk. But in the absence of a real muksuk, either in the case of karka, where real muksuk doesn't exist, or in the context of the animal in the middle of the street, where b'metzias, the real muksuk doesn't exist, so then you follow the secondary din of muksuk. So you have a really conceptual machlokes developing between the two brothers, the Ketzos and his brother, Truma Sakri, what the nature of Cheskes Merkam is. Is Cheskes Merkam ultimately Surim, or is Cheskes Merkam ultimately Dinei Mamon? So hopefully that's from next year. We have to discuss this machlokes a little bit more to see what are the ramifications of this machlokes. How is this going to affect all the principles that we spoke about over the last 2 weeks? And then we'll try to sum up a little bit more about the Mamonis, and then move on back to some of the other Kalalim and Halacha about how we paskin using other, invoking other principles of Eidim, Erechot, Shneidim, etc., things of that nature. So we have a little bit more work to do in the realm of Mamonis, and we'll move back to the general rules of Yisur. Okay. Next week, just are both of us going to be around next Sunday? In theory?